It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Good to have you along on this Friday. The Evansville-Vanderburgh School Board voted unanimously this week to terminate a teacher at North High School over sexual misconduct allegations. Sarah Lesh of the Evansville Courier and Press was there for Monday's meeting and joins me now. As always, Sarah, thanks for coming along.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. Well, let's talk about this story a bit. Who is this teacher and what is he accused of?
Sure. So the teacher is Noah McBride, 26. He was a teacher at North High School up until this past Monday when he was terminated, with a back date of May 5th, specifically within board minutes, it stated. He is accused of 15 counts, 14 of those being felony charges. Those include child seduction, which is the specific legal term. It's a level 4 felony. He is also accused of that same felony, but specifically where the defendant, so in this case McBride, is in a position of power, a coach and something
right,
like that.
Right.
And then a couple level 5 felonies as well, solicitation for sexual intercourse and solicitation for sexual materials. And then materials harmful to minors, which is still a felony. It's just a level 6 felony. Level 6 felony official misconduct, which typically comes along, like I mentioned, when you're in a position of power, a position of responsibility.
Like a teacher or a coach.
Yes. You'll often see that, too, when an elected official or something like that. That's typically where you might have heard that before.
Right.
And then he also has a felony obstruction of justice, and a misdemeanor count of intimidation. So it's a long slew of charges focused in on this alleged relationship that he was having with a student.
Now, how old was the alleged victim? Do we know when this relationship started?
Yes. So from the affidavit, the relationship occurred when she was 15. And so this would have been a couple years ago, and it continued for at least a year based on the affidavit. Throughout this time, he was fully employed by North and was in contact with her because of that position that he held.
I see. Now, how did these alleged acts come to light? How did authorities learn about it?
So the reported victim went to Holly's House, which is a local organization that deals with sexual abuse here in Evansville. So the victim was able to go to Holly's House, sit down with a counselor and go through the allegations, which at this point then turned into criminal charges.
Yes, Holly's House is, has been very active in such investigations in the past, right? So as I understand it, the accused harmed himself before being arrested. Is that right?
Yes. So we, of course, don't have a ton of details on that. Specifics of what we have confirmed from local law enforcement is the Vanderburgh County Sheriff's Department attempted to serve a warrant for his arrest. And at that time, he became aware of their presence at his residence, at which point he attempted to harm himself. So he was taken to the hospital before he was taken to jail. He was actually not taken into official custody until a couple days after he had been in the hospital, and then even a couple days more before he was officially booked into the Vanderburgh County Jail.
Yeah. This is the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. We're speaking with Evansville Courier and Press correspondent Sarah Lesh. You can see this story and others at CourierPress.com. Now, Sarah, also as part of your reporting, you mentioned that the Indiana Department of Education did not have any licenses or permits on file for Mr. McBride. How was he able to teach?
Yeah, so this thread of the story actually came from seeing parents commenting on social media on the initial stories. There were essentially some frustration with the word of the use of the word teacher within our reporting, and some people saying that he was only in a coaching position, that he wasn't a teacher, and then others coming in and saying, no, he had my child in this class or this class.
Right.
And so I tried to seek some clarity on that. We wanted to make sure we were accurately reporting what his position was. Mm-hmm. And so to do that, there is a lookup that you can see teacher permits for anyone here in the state of Indiana. And also within records, school board minutes, typically any hirings, reassignments of position, all of that is in the documents that they approve during school board. So mm-hmm. when I was going in and looking, he doesn't have any sort of license or permit on file with the state of Indiana. So he does not have a teaching license. So in school board minutes, then I found that he had been reassigned from his position as a paraprofessional or a one-on-one, which is a person who works for the school who is typically in a one-on-one situation with a student who has special needs.
I see.
So he was in that position, at which point he was reassigned to teach social studies and Spanish at North High School.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had that position. It's lease started in 2024, and I reached out to the school corporation kind of asking, you know, essentially that the state is saying that they don't have any records of him having a teaching license. Can you tell me a little bit about how he's in this position?
Mm-hmm.
And I had already found that there were a lot of ways to be in the classroom before you officially have your teaching license. You can be on the track getting your degree in some of these instances before, or getting your specific class on your ability to teach, on your licensing. But in this case, it was something called an adjunct permit, which from reading from the state and from the Indiana School Boards Association, that is used for someone who has lived experience in these roles, and then they have to have at least 4 years of experience, and then they have to pass a background check, and then the schools can give them an adjunct permit, which is solely the discretion of the school and the school board. The state does not issue these permits. So the school board had signed an adjunct permit. The only issue from my end and from the Courier and Press's end in being able to report some specifics with that is that we asked multiple times to have the documentation of his adjunct permit provided to us, and we have not received it and not had any answer to those requests. And so at this point, I'm not really sure where that stands or, who all signed it. It's supposed to be the president of the board at the time and then the superintendent. And so we have kind of had that a standstill. And then, of course, this past Monday, they revoked that permit anyway for the teaching and then also his coaching position.
And terminated Noah McBride. You mentioned the adjunct way. It sounds like there are, as you mentioned, several ways in which someone can become a teacher, at least on a temporary basis or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we that sort of brings to mind teacher shortages that we've seen across the state. I'm guessing they do want to make it easy in some ways, right?
Yeah. So when you go into the different types of licensing and permits for the state of Indiana, there are a lot of stories you can find. Chalkbeat, for example, is a completely education-focused newsroom, and they have written quite a few stories. They wrote one that I looked at while doing this reporting, specifically on the adjunct permits, that those were put into place really to help those teacher shortages. They were set aside so that maybe for something like shop class or an engineering class, something where a person who was doing this in real life was able to come in. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might be easiest just to think about it more how it is at a college level, where you think of an adjunct professor as someone who comes in and they teach, a couple classes a week, and they have their professional job in that area that they do the rest of the time. But in this instance, of course, these teachers who are working at the K-12 level are that is their full-time job, but they are supposed to have had that lived experience previously in the content area that they're teaching.
Yeah. Now, of course, a situation like this where you have a teacher, as we mentioned, a person of power dealing with younger students, that's going to grab a lot of attention, possibly some concern. What kind of reaction have you heard from maybe the public at general, but maybe more specifically parents of students at North?
Sure. So my understanding right now is that there has not been anyone coming to school board or anything to speak on this. Mm-hmm. And I can't speak, of course, to if individual teachers or administrators have received emails or things like that from parents. But I will say that obviously this was one on social media that got a lot of attention, a lot of comments from people saying my student goes here or they've had a class with him and things like that. And one of the biggest things that seemed to stick out for me, again, had to do with the licensing and the permit issues, that there was some concern about having someone in the position who didn't go through all of the trainings and things that are specified for a licensed teacher. Mm-hmm. Not to say that there are no trainings for adjunct teachers. They do have to go through trainings, right. Things that you would think typical, like spotting the signs of sexual abuse and things like that. They are supposed to be trained in that area. They're also supposed to have a teacher on staff that is sort of their guide, their mentor teacher. But there were a lot of concerns with, you know, how many teachers are in this position in those roles. And I did find in the reporting, I believe it was specifically in the story on his licensing, that there were a couple other adjunct teachers when I was going through teacher records for the EVSC. But the difference between McBride and those other teachers is that they were on either a substitute permit, which is, of course, exactly what it says it is.
Sure.
This teacher already had a substitute permit, and they had hired her on as an adjunct. So she had had some experience at other schools already with subbing.
I see.
And then there was another who was on a transition to teaching. So she is currently getting her degree, and they have her in as an adjunct teacher. So his was the only one that I couldn't find clear documentation on. And so I don't know how often this occurs, but I will say that from the reporting, it seems his specific situation was quite an anomaly in terms of having no easy and direct licensing or permit proof.
This is the Friday Wrap on WNIN. Our guest is Sarah Lesh of the Evansville Courier and Press. You can read her stories on this and others at courierpress.com. Well, Sarah, what is the next step in this case?
Sure. So McBride is currently out on bond. He had a $10,000 bond. The judge granted a bond reduction, actually, at the request of his attorney. Scott Danks is representing him. And his next hearing is going to be in June, June 18th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that will really just probably be a progress hearing. I would say we're still quite a bit away from any sort of trial or anything like that. But that's the next step. And until then, he'll remain out on bond.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sarah, anything else about this story that we haven't touched on?
No, I don't think so. I think that's all for now. And of course, we'll continue covering it, and we'll continue covering to any angle specifically with the school corporation as well as the criminal case.
So. Yes, indeed. That is Sarah Lesh of the Evansville Courier and Press. You can see her stories at courierpress.com. As always, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you along. All right, well, coming up on the Friday Wrap, WNIN's Tim Jagolo will join us. We'll listen back to a couple of his stories from this past week, including what's happening at the Evansville Animal Care and Control Shelter, and also how folks are celebrating Historic Preservation Month. It's all coming up on the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Hope you can stay with us. That's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Good to have you along on this Friday. Well, this week, the Evansville Animal Care and Control Shelter was again overflowing with found and surrendered animals. As WNIN's Tim Jagalow reported, the city says it's working on making improvements to reduce overcrowding.
It's sunny and 80 degrees outside. At the Evansville Animal Care and Control Shelter, there's no more room inside for dogs, so four of them are staying in outside kennels. The Evansville Animal Care and Control Shelter is again overflowing with found and relinquished animals. On Tuesday, the city shared ways they plan to address this chronic issue, like the new Foster to Adopt program, says Evansville Mayor Stephanie Terry.
And it's going to allow us to take your pets home the same day that you adopt, which is a big win and helps clear out the shelters a little bit more sooner than normal.
They're also exploring expanding shelter hours and reducing stray hold times through an ordinance amendment.
And then we're also putting in place volunteer orientation, I think, which is huge. This place would not survive without the tremendous volunteers that we have. And so we want to put some structure and framework around that volunteer program, again, so that we're offering the best that we can to the residents of the community.
These ideas are from the Winter Animal Control Town Hall and nonprofit organization Best Friends Animal Society. Todd Robertson, who oversees the shelter, says it also falls back on pet owners to help reduce shelter overpopulation.
If we could get everybody in the community to become responsible pet owners, then the need for animal care and control will diminish tremendously.
But because this means spaying, neutering, and licensing pets. Robertson says most strays are not really strays. They were simply let loose from the owner's home.
So we end up picking them up, and then we end up having to put them in the shelter, look for people who would be volunteers, fosters, adopters, and therein lies the problem. So if we could just really get, not just in Evansville, but nationwide, people to really take and be concerned about becoming responsible pet owners, it will diminish this overpopulation of pets tremendously.
For WNIN News, I'm Tim Jagalow.
And Tim joins us live now in the studio. Tim, good to have you along again.
Great to be here, as always.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, anyway, you mentioned, or actually Todd Robertson mentioned, overcrowding at animal shelters nationwide. So can you expand on that? Apparently it's a problem just about everywhere.
I think it is, and I remember doing stories about this problem even in Michigan, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the ASPCA says that in 2024, 5.8 million dogs and cats entered shelters and rescues, and that's a slight decline over previous years. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's split between dogs and cats evenly, and so whenever there's a decline or an increase, it's an even addition. However, large dogs are staying in shelters longer, and that also adds to the overpopulation and limits the space for new animals to come in. 4.2 million animals were adopted, which was steady to 2023. So again, this is 2024 data.
Yeah. The latest we have, I assume.
Yeah, this is the latest we have, and that's from the shelter count of 2024. 60% overall, these animals are strays, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And 29% were owner surrenders who just couldn't take care of them anymore. And again, there's still more animals coming into shelters than are being adopted. And that's where the problem comes from, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I find it interesting that dogs and cats are split about 50-50 in the shelters. Now you mentioned that animal control. You covered a town hall that they had, I believe, back in January, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, basically, what did they talk about then? And is any of that being translated into work they're doing now?
Well, this was in January, and of course, the discussion was prompted by the overcrowding locally and nationally. Mm-hmm. And so a lot was discussed, and some of it wasn't necessarily viable to do. For example, you know, volunteers doing repair work at the shelter, and then they can't do that. But there were some things that they talked about that could be implemented. They talked about the root causes of overcrowding, you know, like not spaying and neutering, and they talked about the need for low costs spaying and neutering. And that's when the Vandenberg County Humane Society representative mentioned the massive backlog of animals that need to be spayed and neutered.
Right.
And if they have to wait 6 months to get spayed and neutered, that could, how many, you know, that's a litter of puppies in that
yeah,
time,
right? Yeah, a lot can happen in 6 months, yeah.
Yep. So, you know, they also talked about, you know, the good news about Vandenberg County Humane Society's 93% live release rate, over 41%, which is better than the 41% for the 90s. So regarding things that they talked about that they're implementing now, some of it probably translates, but a lot of it also is coming from the help of the Best Friends Society.
Yeah. Well, can you remind us what improvements to the local animal control can be implemented first, and you know what might take a while?
The first thing that they implemented were the improvements to vaccine protocol, and also having better, more effective cleaning and disinfecting practices. Mm-hmm. And this is also from the Best Friends Society, who've actually been embedded with the animal control shelter for a little while now. The foster to adopt program is not yet in use. That's still being finalized, and they're working on kind of like the rules and maybe the penalties for non-compliance. Again, that's also a suggestion from the Best Friends Society.
I see.
Also in progress is the formalized volunteer training and formalized release process. Hmm. All major changes have to be voted upon, though, at the board meeting in June.
I see. Well, can you tell us a little more about what perhaps you've been learning about the local animal care and control shelter?
Well, the shelter exists underneath, and I'm not sure why, but it exists underneath the transportation department, and that's where Todd Robertson comes in.
Right.
But there are 7 animal control officers to cover the whole city. You've also got, you know, Heather McDaniel. She's the assistant superintendent. And they said that in 2022, they had 7,600 runs in 2022. And they handle dogs and cats and gerbils and reptiles and birds and a lot of other things.
Right.
I will add, and this is something that I don't know if I touched on in the audio story, which is that I asked Mayor Terry, why is it so important to talk about and improve the shelter situation and eliminate overcrowding? And, you know, the answer is very simple. The short answer is that it helps to improve neighborhood vibrance and safety,
yeah.
And you know, just helps to, you know, improve the city in general. And
helps the safety of the animals as well.
Safety of the animals as well. And another thing to mention is that, you know, they briefly discussed, I think, expanding the shelter, and they decided ultimately that's not something that they want to do. And also considering, like, the budget cuts that are happening,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
it's a good thing that they went this route, really.
Yeah, yeah. A tough time to be making expansion plans, one would think, financially. Well, anything else to add, Tim, about this story that we haven't touched on?
Not really. I'm looking forward to seeing what these changes can do. I'm sure they are as well.
Sure. All right, this is the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. We're chatting with WNIN's Tim Jagalo. And Tim, don't go anywhere,
okay,
because we've got yet another story here. May, as our listeners may know, is Historic Preservation Month. And there are opportunities both online and in person to learn about Indiana history. This is WNIN's Tim Jagalo's report from this past week.
On Monday afternoon, Danny Mitchell stops to take a photo of the plaque, which marks the original location of Evansville founder Hugh McGarry's log cabin. It's on the side of the WNIN building. He and his family, including wife Karen, are on a historic walking tour of downtown Evansville.
Just wanting to get more of the history of town and the older buildings and things. I've lived here all my life and never have really done anything like this.
I like it because I get to know the people whose names we know from the city. And, you know, schools or roads are named after them, and to understand where they fit in our history.
And what's your name?
Karen Mitchell. I'm his wife.
K-A-R-E-N?
Uh-huh.
May is Historic Preservation Month, which highlights local history, especially the history of places and buildings. The Indiana DNR's 2025 Historic Preservation Month theme is The Faces of Architecture. Ashley Thomas with the DNR says such interest in local history is what gives importance to places. Historic buildings can also show how society has evolved.
But also, I think it contributes a lot to the feeling of a community and what makes it feel like home to people. Like, you have memories of going to specific buildings as a child and coming back and seeing those buildings. It kind of provides that connection of home, and it gives different communities kind of their own character and their own personality. And I think that's really important.
That theme, the faces of architecture, refers to actual faces carved in limestone that grace many public buildings.
I mean, a lot of Midwest states have very similar architecture in general, but Indiana does have a much higher concentration of limestone buildings than most other states do. And that's because of Bedford and the Bedford region. It's known as the limestone capital of the world.
She says at the DNR, they want to draw attention to such craftsmanship that has stood the test of time.
I mean, it adds so much character to the buildings. And we just, personally, as a staff, we love them. We think they're great. And we just want more people to realize they're there.
These limestone faces can be seen at the Indiana DNR website. There's also a historic preservation photo contest. Back in downtown Evansville, Joe Engler with the Vandenberg County Historic Society is leading the walking tour of downtown Evansville.
One thing to note is the town originally was from here to 3rd Street. So Riverside, 1st, 2nd, 3rd. You're talking three blocks that way, and you're at the end of town. And it was three blocks this way to Chestnut, three blocks that way to Court. So you're in a pretty small area.
He likes starting at the corner of Main Street and Riverside Drive. The Ohio River is just a stone's throw away. He says here he can feel the city's connection to the river.
When they ended up building the levee in the 30s, that kind of cordoned off the town from the river. That was, you know, what founded it. All the traffic, everything, all the visitors, all that stuff was usually riverboats. I mean, they had obviously other ways of doing it, but we were very much a river town. A lot of the tours you do now look at the old buildings. We're kind of actually getting a little bit more context and putting it in the history of when Evansville was founded, you know, over 200 years ago, how it grew up. So it's really delving into the old part of it.
To explore the history of the city, there's also an upcoming old courthouse exterior tour this Saturday and an Evansville Then and Now presentation next week. For WNIN News, I'm Tim Jagolo.
And Tim is still with us here on the Friday Wrap. Well, Tim, maybe you could mention some of those events that are coming up in addition to those?
No. It's just those two.
Oh, okay.
There might be more coming up, but that's basically just, I don't tend to put times in my stories.
Oh, I gotcha.
But yeah, so, I mean, on Saturday, that's the first one coming up. That's the old courthouse exterior tour.
Right.
That's at 1 p.m. on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And they're asking you to meet at Court Street in front of the courthouse.
Okay.
On Tuesday, May 20th, is the Evansville Then and Now presentation. That's at 6:30 at the Willard Library. And I would just follow Historic Evansville for more events. They've had events going on all month.
Right, right.
From here and there.
Lots of things going on, of course. And yes, that the weather should be good by Saturday, we're told. That should be good weather for that exterior tour of the courthouse. Maybe you could tell us a little more about Historic Preservation Month.
So this is actually a national event. Mm-hmm. It starts at the national, it goes all the way down to the local level.
Right.
But the 2025 theme is the power of place. And it's the 2025 theme for the National Register of Historic Places. Hmm. And they have 100,000 listings on their registry of places across the U.S. And that was, you know, this was established in 1973 by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And basically it's designed to draw attention to, reaffirm the commitment and the investment into maintaining historic places.
Yeah. Well, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about limestone and local construction. Yeah. I know Bedford stone is a very well-known area for such materials.
It is, and I was able to do a pretty fun in-depth story about limestone a few years ago, mm-hmm. and I was able to get some scientific information about it. And basically, this, you know, just north of here, not necessarily right here in Evansville, but north of here,
sure.
You know, it's all limestone underneath, and it's, you know, that was all basically developed over 320 million years ago. It's scientifically called the karst environment, and most caves are built from or made from limestone.
Yeah.
And so it's an important construction commodity. As we were talking, we mentioned important buildings. You know, the Empire State Building is mostly Indiana limestone.
Yeah,
we've got the Indiana State House. We've got the Pentagon. And, you know, the Shawnee Cave System is made from limestone, mm-hmm. in Spring Mill State Park. So lots of limestone, and if you just take your own walking tour of downtown Evansville, you can find several buildings that have tons of limestone details
indeed.
Built into it.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tim, anything else to add about Evansville's historic places?
Well, we have 81. Or Evansville 81 has 81.
Officially?
I take no credit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. 8 historic districts. And, you know, those historic places are everything from the LST 325 to the courthouse, the McCurdy Hotel, the old post office, mm-hmm. Pearl Steam Laundry, the Memorial Coliseum.
Actually, the Pearl Steam Laundry is no longer with us because that was the building over near the former home of WNIN, which burned down a couple of years ago, or less than 2 years ago now, I think.
So bad example. But we've got some historic districts like the Baird Park neighborhood,
sure,
and Riverside Historic District and Lincolnshire and so on. And so there's tons of history in Evansville to explore.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And a great time to check it out. That is WNIN's Tim Jagelow. As always, Tim, thank you so much for your contributions.
Sure, sure.
We appreciate it very much. All right, well, coming up on the Friday Wrap, we'll tell you the latest on the sinkhole on Riverside Drive. It looks like it's still going to be a while before it is fixed. That's coming up on the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. Hope you can stay with us. It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. Well, officials are still waiting for the Ohio River to fall and to stay low long enough so crews can fix the sinkhole on Evansville's riverfront. As we reported this week, flooding has also been happening in nearby buildings.
Water and Sewer Utility Executive Director Vic Kelson says crews will need weeks of low river levels to keep water out of the sinkhole.
It'd probably be a couple of weeks before we even knew what we needed to do to fix it, beyond stabilizing the water pipes and then repairing the sewer.
In the meantime, Kelson says crews have backfilled the collapsed area with rock
to keep it from the situation from degrading any faster.
But Troy Wilson, who represents the Masonic Temple at 3rd and Chestnut Streets, says the backfilling has caused rainwater to back up into the historic building.
And we have a massive, probably 4,000 square foot basement that was 100% finished, now is totally has to be gutted.
Wilson also says the nearby Trinity United Methodist Church basement has flooded. Utility officials said they would speak with Wilson about the flooding problems. Meanwhile, the utility's director of operations, Justin Gettling, is asking detoured drivers for more patience and says river forecasts look encouraging.
We're going to get 2 to 4 weeks of below 16 feet, 18 feet river levels, and that will extremely help us.
Officials say the sinkhole has already cost the city about $500,000, and final repairs will likely be in the millions. The sinkhole developed on Riverside Drive in late February.
In other news, some parents and experts say schools aren't properly reporting bullying cases to the state, and they say Indiana's definition of bullying is flawed. Reporter Isabella Vesperini filed this report this week.
Skylar Wampler is learning Taekwondo to cope with the bullying his mother said he endured at Edgewood Schools. From afar, the scar on Skylar's head from a bully hitting him years ago isn't visible.
Our biggest thing is kind of push him away a little bit and say, get back, leave me alone. And you say it loud enough that a teacher can hear you or someone can hear you. And he's used that instead of having to be afraid.
Skylar was a target of bullies because of his autism.
Students hit him with objects on top of his head, tripped him, called him names.
He was even straddled and punched on the school bus.
He would be coming home begging and crying, Mommy, don't send me back to school. Don't make me go back because it hurt. And it would literally make me cry every time because you have to send them. And I didn't want to send them back there.
Because of the bullying, Skylar gets scared more easily. He's afraid to make friends.
Okay, and then the next move. We're learning striking combos, correct? You have a ton of...
He shuts down a lot more since he was bullied, and he doesn't want to communicate.
It's unclear whether the alleged incidents were reported in state-mandated school bullying statistics. The state's data don't list every school, and many report zero cases. But while working with clients across the state, Attorney Tammy Myers says she has seen a significant increase in bullying cases, not only in Perry Township schools, where she has a pending lawsuit, but also in Monroe County, Lake County, and Terre Haute.
Some districts are doing a good job of reporting. So you might see, you know, 60, 70 bullying reports for a particular district. And then you might see a large district and it's zero. And you know that cannot possibly be true. They're just not reporting it.
The state has a long definition of bullying that includes the intent to harass, ridicule, humiliate, intimidate, or harm the targeted student. To critics like Rachel Van Alstyne, the most important point in the definition is that it has to happen more than once to be reported.
Why does this definition exist in this way when we know that bullying can happen one time? It's created a loophole for schools not to thoroughly investigate and document the abuse and bullying of our children.
Representative Vernon Smith proposed a bill this legislative session that would have expanded the definition of bullying to require reporting even a single incident. The bill passed unanimously in the House, but stalled in the Senate.
Sometimes the one act is so traumatic.
Smith doesn't believe the state's Department of Education is emphasizing the issue enough.
And I know that the Department of Education has a lot of responsibilities, but what you prioritize means that you're going to give more attention to it. And if you see it's a need, then you go and you meet that need. There is a need in this state.
Edgewood officials think changing the definition so that one act of aggression counts as bullying could unnecessarily inflate the data. To Edgewood School's Assistant Superintendent Matt Irwin, it's unclear whether there is an under-reporting problem.
At the end of the day, I don't know that the reporting piece of it is something that is most important. I think the most important thing is the education that we're putting into our kids' hands and into their minds to help them to be better citizens, to be better friends, to be better learners.
And despite assurances from school teachers, some parents still say they feel helpless when trying to support their kids through bullying.
Am I letting them down? Am I a bad mom?
The Indiana Youth Institute reports that 40% of parents in Indiana reported their child aged 6 to 17 was bullied in the 2022-23 school year. That's close to the national rate of 38%. 2024 had the second highest number of bullying incidents in the past decade. For WFIU News, I'm Isabella Vesperini.
It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. Straight ahead, it's the Sports Chat with Jevin Redman. And then we'll run down the weekend notebook with Caitlin Bitley. Hope you can stay with us. This is the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson, and joining me now is Jevin Redman with this week's Sports Chat. Jevin, as always, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, John.
All right, well, let's talk about some high school sports. I understand high school baseball is about to wrap up, right?
Yeah, they're in the closing stretch of the regular season, and right now it's been a very competitive SIAC, the conference here throughout the tri-state, and Castle and Jasper both are 7-2. They've wrapped up their conference slate, so they will share the SIAC title. There is a chance it could be a three-way tie, depending on what happens with the Monterey and Harrison game this Saturday. Monterey is 6-2, so you could have three teams that finish tied for first. They share the championship at 7-2, but Castle won a thrilling game against Memorial. They had it actually at Charles H. Braun Stadium on Evansville's campus for the night. It was two dominant pitchers, Matthew Fisher for Memorial, who's going to IU, Will Coleman for Castle, who's going to UK. Mm-hmm. They squared off. It was a pitcher's duel, and Castle won 2-1.
Wow. Well, also high school basketball still in the news, right?
Yeah, every week seems like I come on here and give you an update with new hires and changes and whatnot. But so the position at Heritage Hills High School has been filled. Josh Wetzel is their new coach for boys basketball. He's been an assistant coach on staff the last 22 years. He's a grad from there back in 1997 and is a science teacher at the Heritage Hills Middle School. So Josh Wetzel is the new head coach for boys basketball Heritage Hills, and also North Posey boys basketball has found their head coach is Jeff Embry, who's a 1981 Mount Vernon High School graduate, was a multi-sport athlete, and he's been coaching almost the last four decades, he's been at different stops in Kentucky and Indiana. So an experienced coach. Yeah. Jeff Embry is a new head coach at North Posey for boys basketball.
All right. Well, let's move on to the college scene where our baseball season is wrapping up, right?
Yeah, this is the final weekend for the regular season. Two games left for both Evansville and USI baseball. USI baseball has clinched a spot in the OVC tournament. Right now, they're 13-12 in the conference. They would be the sixth seed of the season ended today. They're playing at Lynnwood this weekend. USI lost last night 9-4. But they play tonight at 5 o'clock and tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Evans on the other end, their backs are against the wall now after losing last night 9-4 against Bradley. The Aces have to win today and tomorrow to make the conference tournament as they're two games back of Bradley for that last spot. So the Aces with some pressure on them today and tomorrow. They're actually playing right now at 12 noon was first pitch, and they play tomorrow at 1 o'clock as well.
All right. Well, over at Bossy Field, the Otters wrapped up their first homestand, right?
Correct. They had a six-game homestand to start the season. The Otters went 3-3, and now they hit the road this weekend. They're at the Mississippi Mud Monsters. That's a fun mascot, the Mud Monsters.
That's a new team, right?
It is, yes. And they play this weekend, three games. First game is tonight at 6:30. The Otters are back at home, though, on Tuesday against the Schaumburg Boomers at Bossy Field.
All right. And speaking of pro ball, pro basketball, we now know when the Pacers are going to play next, right?
Yes, the Indiana Pacers are off the Eastern Conference Finals, back-to-back seasons for the Pacers. That series will start on Wednesday. They don't know their opponent just yet. Right now, Boston and New York, they're still playing in the semifinals. The Knicks have a 3-2 lead over the Celtics. Game 6 is tonight in New York. So if the Knicks win, it would be Knicks-Pacers. If Boston wins, they'd have a Game 7 on Monday. Determine who plays the Pacers.
Gotcha. All right, it's also rival weekend in Major League Baseball, right?
It is, yeah. So the Cardinals play at the Royals. You have the Cubs and White Sox playing in Chicago. Mm-hmm. That's at Wrigley Field. And the Reds are hosting the Guardians. So some fun matchups this weekend. The Cardinals, they've been playing well. They're 24-20 in the season. They just had their 9-game winning streak snapped the other night, but they're 5-1 on their current road trip. And right now, just one game back at the Cubs for first place.
All right. Well, we hope the weather will cooperate for baseball this weekend. Jevin Redman, as always, thank you very much for the Sports Chat.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Coming up on the Friday Wrap, Caitlin Bentley will join me for the Weekend Notebook. Hope you can stay with us. It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. And joining me live here in the studio from the Arts Council for Southwestern Indiana, or of Southwestern Indiana, I guess it is, Caitlin Bentley once again joining us. Caitlin, great to see you.
It's nice to see you as well.
Oh, let me get you mic'd up here. Great to have you with us. All right. Well, it's a busy weekend notebook, as it often is. Let's start with a free week at Wesselman Woods. It's continuing that free admission through Sunday. And that's when the Evansville Philharmonic's ICAMP String Quartet will perform at 2 p.m. at the Adonata Pond Amphitheater. The free week is also an opportunity to check out the new Accessible Path to the Welburn Baptist Foundation Nature Playscape. Again, that's a free week at Wesselman Woods, continues through Sunday. Also happening this evening, Caitlin, I understand we have an Arts Awards event happening at the University of Evansville.
Yes, so there is an artist reception for artist Ashton Dunham, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. They received the University of Evansville Afroimson Bridge Fellow Award. So their pottery and their prints will be on display. It'll be a good time. That is at the Melvin Peterson Gallery on campus.
All right. What time does that start?
5 p.m.
5 p.m., not too long from now. All right. Also happening this evening, we have a musical event at your brother's bookstore, right?
Yes, live at the bookstore. There's going to be some hip-hop and rock tonight by the Push Soul Collective. So that's a group of artists from the Midwest, but tonight there's going to be a large mix of Evansville hip-hop artists, as well as a couple from, I think there is someone from Chicago and someone from Louisville. So doors open at 6:30, music at 7 p.m. They do recommend that the show is 18 plus. You can get tickets at the Push Soul or pushsoul.com.
All right. That's at your brother's bookstore here on Main Street in downtown Evansville. All right. Well, let's move on to tomorrow, Saturday. We have the Spring Funk in the City. It starts tomorrow. The free festival features more than 80 artists from the region, along with food vendors and live music. It starts at 10 a.m., goes to 5 p.m. in the Haney's Corner Arts District. That's the spring version of Funk in the City. Also happening tomorrow, and again, weather's looking great for tomorrow once we get these storms out of the area, we have an old courthouse exterior tour happening, right, Caitlin?
Yes, this tour is going to highlight the exterior of the historic courthouse in downtown Evansville. It's a free tour that starts at 1 p.m., and it's part of Historic Preservation Month.
Yes, indeed. We've had a lot of events going on for Historic Preservation Month. Again, that's the old courthouse tour. The exterior tour, it starts at 1 tomorrow here in downtown Evansville. Also getting underway is the Henderson Summer Fest. You might say Henderson is getting a jump on summer with this annual festival. It starts at 5 p.m. Saturday at the intersection of Walnut and 2nd Streets in downtown Henderson. This year's fest features the Tom Petty tribute band Free Fallin', fundraising food booths, a beer garden, and activities for kids. Admission to Henderson Summer Fest is free. Also happening on Saturday, it's the Evansville Food Truck Festival at Bossy Field. Dozens of food trucks will be set up inside the historic ballpark from 5 to 9 p.m. Saturday, and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. Tickets start at about $9 for the Evansville Food Truck Festival at Bossy Field. Also happening tomorrow, Caitlin, I understand there is an event at the Arts Council.
Yes, tomorrow we're having an On the Roof preview event for our artist members and donors. That starts at 6:30 tomorrow. We're going to have Corduroy Orbison and Georgia Funkadelic make an epic comeback because their concert last summer was unfortunately rained out. So we're going to make up for it tomorrow. And yeah, come see us.
Yeah, once again, the rain should be long gone, so shouldn't be any problem with the weather tomorrow. Also happening tomorrow evening, just a little further down Main Street, we have the Evansville Philharmonic Youth Orchestra Spring Concert, right?
Yes, conductors Adam Clark and Lee Veazey will lead the young musicians. I think this is their last concert of the season, so go support the youth. Mm-hmm. It starts at 7 p.m. at the Victory Theater. Tickets are $15, and they can be purchased online at the Evansville Philharmonic website. Students and children are admitted for free.
Yes, indeed. Always a nice event there at the Evansville Philharmonic Youth Orchestra Spring Concert. That's tomorrow evening at the Victory. Well, moving on to Sunday, this is a big day for a certain church here in downtown Evansville. Trinity United Methodist Church is celebrating its 200th anniversary. A worship service starts at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday, led by Bishop Tracy Malone. Attendees will include Evansville Mayor Stephanie Terry. A special choral piece written for the bicentennial will be performed, followed by a reception in the newly refurbished Craig Hall. That's at the Trinity United Methodist Church, the 200th anniversary celebration happening on Sunday. And Caitlin, I believe you have something to add regarding the Arts Council, right?
Yes, the Arts Council is now accepting nominations for the Art Awards. So nominations close at the very end of the month, but we're taking nominations for the Visual Art Award, Young Artist Award, and the prestigious Mayor's Art Award, as well as a few others. So if you know of anyone in the community that you think has made a difference in the past year, go nominate them at artswin.org.
It's as easy as that. That sounds great. All right. Well, that's all for the weekend notebook for this week. And that will wrap up the Friday wrap for this week. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, Sarah Lesh of the Evansville Courier and Press. Also, a big thanks to Tim Jagalow, who joined us for a couple of stories this week. We also would like to thank Jevin Redman for the sports chat today. Also, a big thanks to Caitlin Bentley from the Arts Council. Thanks to Maria Thomas for social media support this morning. Also, a big thanks to Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations for their support. Also, thanks to listeners like you for your support. I'm John Gibson. I'll be taking a week or so off, so no Friday Wrap next week, but we'll be back later in the month for more of the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. For this Friday, have a good weekend, and that is a wrap. This is 88.3 WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro. With your support, we're building a better tri-state together.